Well, I've been a fan of Clive James since 1980 when I read his book Unreliable Memoirs, the story of his childhood in Cogra in the south of Sydney and his years as a student at Sydney Uni. Clive's lived his adult life in the UK where he's been absolutely prolific. He's written literary criticism and TV criticism, poetry, memoir. He's made a lot of very witty radio and TV shows, including that popular series called Saturday Night Clive, which I reckon is about the best name a TV show ever had. Now, in 2010, Clive was diagnosed with leukemia, and by now, as he says himself, he should have conked out, a certainty which has been postponed by the very timely release of a new drug, which has put Clive's leukemia on hold. And during this borrowed time, he's embarked on one of the most fertile periods of his life. He's released six new books, including his marvellous translation of Dante's Divine Comedy. And now, a book of poems all about the French writer Marcel Proust. So why, when the days have become so precious, would a bloke sit down to write poems about Proust? Proust must really matter to him. Clive, welcome.
Michael, it's a pleasure.
So you've written a little book of poems, which are your commentary on Proust's most famous work. How are we going to translate the title? How do you like to say the title of the novel?
I think always the best English title has been Remembrance of Things Past, which the translator Scott Moncrief borrowed from Shakespeare. And you can't do better than Shakespeare, and the French, on the whole, think you can't do better than Proust. So it's a nice match.
Yeah, it's a sort of love all, isn't it, really? So just briefly, so we have a sense of who he was. Who was he? He died at 51, and he was in poor health for much of his life.
Well, he was never really well, and I suppose, although I've always been interested in him, I got determined to write this poem. After I got sick, I had to make a decision whether just to quit, lie down and listen to the radio, or to get on with things. And I chose the second, and on the whole, it's worked out fairly well. I get quite a lot done because I'm not doing anything else. That's the main reason. I can work on my pet projects, and this one seems so crazy. I thought, let's just give it a crack. And I think it's worked out reasonably well. I'm proud of it.
One of the motifs is how some sensations can carry us back to our past. And the first and most famous of these experiences of travelling back occurs when the narrator eats a cake called a Madeleine dipped in tea. And the narrator says this: "A shudder ran through me and I stopped, intent upon the extraordinary thing that was happening to me. An exquisite pleasure had invaded my senses, something isolated, detached, with no suggestion of its origin." And he's carried back through this sensation to an incident in his childhood. And you start this book of verse commentaries on Proust pretty much reflecting on that incident. I wonder whether you'd mind reading that very opening section for us, Clive.
I'd love to. But I have to tell you that I get the same feelings out of something else than the Madeleine, which is quite solid little cake. I feel the same way about my mother's junkets. My mother made great junket, and the mere thought of the junket was enough to take me back to Ginnelly and to Cogra. From the taste of the scallop shell of cake, made moist by the decoction of lime blossom, it all unfolds inexorably, the vast structure of recollection. In his tongue, l'édifice immense des souvenirs, though it's a structure only in the sense that Gaudi's cathedral in Barcelona and the weird Watts Towers in Los Angeles, eclectic stalagmites of junk, are structures. Or the sandcastle you helped your daughters build before you sat with them to watch the sea, dismantle it and smooth it out and take it back down to where it came from. Architecture, Proust's novel really isn't, though he sets great store by the idea of frozen music. He claims to gaze for hours on end at any stone steeple that recalls the Gothic spire of a Norman church near Baalbek. We doubt that, and then recall Reynaldo Ahn's account of how, while touring a strange house, he left Proust fixed in place, admiring a rose bush. When Ahn came back a long time later, Proust was still there. Was Proust posing? Hahn asked too, but eventually concluded he was not, and so must we.
Clive James reading from the very opening of his book, Gate of Lilacs, a verse commentary on Proust. So you begin with Proust's habit of contemplation for taking time. How does that shape this world that Proust is taking us into, this world where he's moving at such a slow pace compared to the pace we normally live at?
Oh, he's a snail. But then he was interested in snails. He was very interested in nature and the rhythms of nature generally. And we now live in the opposite time. It's like the other end of the spectrum of time, where everything has to happen terrifically fast. And if we want to know something, we just tap a few keys and look into the computer. And Proust had to read books or talk to people or think about it. It was a different pace. And to recapture that pace is the aim of this poem. This poem slows everything down, but makes everything sharp. And the thing I never forgot while I was writing it is that he wrote this colossal book. He wrote it while he was dying, but he'd had lots of practice because he'd always been dying. He was a sick man.
So is art, the writing of the book, some sort of consolation for Proust, a way of fixing things, of holding on to life?
It was life itself. It was his only chance at life in the end. It took a long time to die. And you could say that his death started at the beginning because he had a particularly acute and debilitating form of asthma. So, yes, he made art a way of life. But then a lot of us do. I try to discuss these matters as I go. You can't settle most of them. But the point about Proust is he raises them.
Well, you also discuss your own response with us through your poems, and you write that Proust's book, along with other works of art, has given you, that's Clive James, courage to admit that almost all I've ever loved exists in contrast to my nature.
True. I don't count myself as a very delicate, refined man, and I don't think anyone else ever counted me as that, except perhaps my family occasionally. He's so far apart from me that I'm fascinated when I find that I too am drawn towards loving the delicacy and elegance, because I'm not naturally disposed to it, if you get me. I'm really meant to be out in the street with the other kids chucking rocks at each other. That's the way I was a kid. There was nothing indelicate about me at all. But it's a dimension to life which shines so much more intensely in his book, to the extent that you haven't got it yourself. It's a way of living on a plane of aestheticism. It's a little bit like listening to Wagner, where at those moments in, say, long stretches in Siegfried, when you're thinking, God, I hate this. How long is this going to last? But on the other hand, I can't leave.
Clive, that sense that there's another life that you might have led, there's another you that there might have been, I think I first saw in you, in actually what is one of my favourite pieces of television ever, which is a thing you made in 1988 called Postcard from Paris. It made me weep, and it's filled with your own tender and melancholy yearnings for the life you might have led if only you'd lived in Paris. So you walk around the Paris where you were once a student, and the phrase that resounds through that little documentary you made is Bonjour Tristesse, the famous novel. Hello sadness, I guess it is, isn't it? Hello.
Yes.
Does this novel help you find the Clive James that you're also searching for in that Paris?
Yes, I often think, what would it have been like if I'd arrived in Europe in the early 60s and Paris had been an easy place for a broke student to settle down? It wasn't, in fact. If you wanted to be poor and live the life of Bohemia, you had to go to London, which I did. But I visited Paris as often as I could. I'm still trying to get to Paris, in a way. This book is another attempt to get through the barrier.
On RN, this is Books and Arts, and my guest on the line from his home in Cambridge is the Australian writer Clive James, and we're talking about Proust. And this is Mozart's String Quintet K515.
Isn't that fabulous? Doesn't that put us all in our place? And you know, there's only one Mozart piece that's better, and that's the next quintet, K516. The two of them are jewels. They're like perfect earrings.
Can we talk about sex? Because poem 10 in your commentary is called Adventures of the Aerosol Elixir.
Proust is all sex, but then he says the world is all sex. It all runs on sex and terror. I'll just read this bit from The Adventures of the Aerosol Elixir. The same way molten rock makes possible the earth on which we walk, the way he writes about desire reminds us of what it was when we were still too young to know about its power. But everywhere we felt it, and in everything, the world was soaked in it. And so that's the toughest theme in this little book. And it takes me back to my own first love, which was a long, long time ago, when I was very small, definitely still in short pants, in Katoomba, New South Wales. And she was a little girl staying at the same hotel. And I was trying to figure out how to impress her, and I never did. She always ran. And 3/4 of a century have gone by, and I'm still trying to impress her.
Have you professed your first love, though, to this girl?
Only in this poem now. I've finally done what I should have done in the first place and written her a poem.
Clive, you're the beneficiary of a new drug which stalls the advance of your type of leukemia without curing it, I gather.
Nothing can cure leukemia, but this one holds it back a bit.
Well, I gather that you've actually outlived your famous maple tree.
Now, that was a shock. It's many ways the maple tree has been an embarrassment to me, lovely though it is. My elder daughter gave it to me and planted it for me. And it was lovely, and I was promised that when autumn came, it would burst into these wonderful crimsons and yellows. And I wrote a poem saying that when that happened, that will be my signal to die, because I was very sick at the time. And I wrote a little poem, which was in the New Yorker and went viral. But I found myself in an embarrassing position, because autumn came and the colours came to the tree, and I didn't die. It was a couple of years ago and I'm still here. So my idea that the tree would outlive me turned out to be questionable, because the following autumn the tree died and I'm still here. I've got to make a comedy of it, because it is really, it's a comedy of errors, a comedy of embarrassment. The tree's been replaced at the moment. I'm looking at the replacement now. And wondering what will happen next autumn. I'll write another poem.
Yeah, maybe the tree is your picture of Dorian Gray.
Yes, I'm afraid it is, yes. First of all, it's in better shape than I am, and then it's not.
I'm glad you've still got some action in you, Clive James. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you this morning. Thanks for coming on.
I loved it.
Clive James telling us about his new book of poems. It's called Gate of Lilacs, a verse commentary on Proust, published by Picador. And his huge volume of collected poems is also just out from Picador. And actually, there's a very nice interview with Clive about his poetry in the current edition of Meanjin Quarterly, a very sprightly edition of that little magazine.